Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio and Television with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle, here in the United States. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this planet a far better and much happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we'll do it. We'll make this planet a much better place. During the last hour, we interviewed a wonderful lady named Dr. Marilyn Rosner of the IIIHS Institute in Montreal. She has a wonderful spiritual conference that she'll be happening, she's sponsoring in Montreal. It's the 41st one, from August 12th through the 21st. I will be there as one of the keynote speakers. And if you are in the Montreal area, I urge you all to go. If you like, please see their website at, I believe it's IIIHS.org. We have now a wonderful medium and psychic named Garnet Schulheiser, who used to be a corporate lawyer, but now is writing spiritual books, and his most recent book is called Dance of the Heavenly Bliss. I've read his book, his new book. He's the author of several other wonderful books, and you know, I liked his book so much, he invited me to write the foreword to it, and I just loved it because he had so many interesting things to say. So let's just go right to the interview. Garnet, are you there?
I am, Ted. How are you?
Wonderful. Just wonderful today. Just wonderful. Could you tell my many listeners a little bit about your background and how you ended up writing this book, or with Albert's help writing the book?
Right. Well, okay. I was, as you mentioned, I was a corporate lawyer. I was practicing law in Calgary at the time. Mm-hmm. This was in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I was walking down the street one day, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a homeless man just jumps out in front of me. And he looked like a typical homeless person, except that he had these amazing, dazzling, sparkling blue eyes that sort of penetrated deep within my soul, mm-hmm. and sent me this wave of pure, unconditional love that infused my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and love and security.
Wonderful.
And so that was the beginning of a conversation that went on for several months. He appeared to me the first three times as a homeless man, and after that he was just a voice in my head. And he was actually one of my spirit guides in disguise.
Oh.
And he had appeared in front of me disguised as a homeless man to get my attention because he wanted to have a dialogue with me. He wanted to answer all the questions that I had been asking myself all through my life, like, who am I? Why am I here? Mm-hmm. What's my life's purpose, and mm-hmm. what happens to me when I die?
Wow.
And so he showed up sort of out of the blue, and we had a dialogue that went off and on for several months. After the first three visits, it was by telepathy. He was an amazing, wise spirit who had really great answers to all of life's big questions. Mm-hmm. And partway through our conversation, he said, you know, I'm not here just to satisfy your curiosity and answer your questions. I want you to write a book about my revelations so that everyone will have access to them. And so as a result, he convinced me to write my first book, which is Dancing on a Stamp. That was my very first book, which was published in 2012. And then he disappeared out of my life for a little while. Suddenly he came back in a very different format. I was sleeping in my bedroom one night, mm-hmm. I woke up and I see this ghost-like ethereal figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. Mm-hmm. And when it moved closer towards me, I could see it was my old friend Albert,
wow.
my spirit guide, except he was in astral form.
Wow.
And I said, well, what brings you here, Albert? And he says, well, we're on to sort of the second chapter of our adventures together. I'm going to take you on some out-of-body adventures, some astral travels to the spirit side, to other places in the universe, other places on our planet, because I want you to write about what you see and what you hear. Because I think that a picture is worth a thousand words.
Wow.
And so then he just literally reached out and he grabbed my astral hand, wow. pulled my astral body out of my physical body, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
I turned around and I looked back in there. My physical body was still sound asleep in my bed.
Fascinating.
And he just sort of took me by the hand. He led me up through the ceiling. When you're in astral form, Ted, you have no weight. Mm-hmm. You're just a being of energy.
Sure.
We went up through, so you can go through walls and ceilings. So we went up through the ceiling, rose up through the sky, and eventually he took me, we floated above our beautiful planet for a while, and then he took me through a shimmering doorway, which was a doorway to the spirit side.
Wow.
And he led me through there. And as soon as I stepped across the threshold, I found myself in this beautiful lush meadow with green grass and tall majestic trees and wildflowers. Wow. It was just an amazingly beautiful place. Wow. And that was the beginning of my very first astral adventure to the spirit side. And he took me on a number of other adventures that were detailed in my second book, which is Dancing Forever with Spirit. Mm-hmm. That was published about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And then he came back for another set of astral trips, which led to the writing of my third book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And he came back in the same fashion, came to my bedroom sort of unannounced and took me on a series of new astral trips to various other places in the universe to meet with some very wise and famous souls on the spirit side who all had a very deep message for humanity. And that resulted in my third book, which is just in the process of being released right now.
Wonderful.
It's available from my publisher and is will be available. It's available in ebook form right now from all the popular online stores and will be available in paperback format at the end of March from these stores. So I'm just rolling it out, Ted.
Well, I'm so happy to have you on today, Garnet, because I was guided to have you on today. I was guided to have you on my show previously. And I was guided to ask you to come to my Galactic Wisdom Conference in June. These are things that I'm on the same page as you are for, you know, the purpose of my show is to raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. And I can't think what a better person to have on today than you to discuss your wonderful work. I've got a copy of your book here. I've written scribbled on. It's over 200 pages long, and I've got scribbles on almost on every single page of my notes and thoughts. So I won't be able to get to everything. But I would like to have you on again, of course, before the conference in June. But one of the things that just kind of flashed on me is that this is from Albert here. And Albert, by the way, he just came in and he's very pleased that you're on today. I want to read this. You write that this is on page 43 of your wonderful book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. You write the spirits are dismayed by the abuse. Oh no, animals are dismayed by the abuse they've received over the years from humans, and do not understand why humans are unable to control their negative emotions, which fosters conflicts and wars among humans, the killing and maiming of animals, and the pollution of our planet. And then on the next paragraph, briefly, I'll just read this one sentence. On your last trip with Albert, you met a member of a secretive race of intelligent humanoids known as the Sasquatch, who, quote, regard humans as a violent and aggressive race that rules the world with a reckless disregard for the welfare of Mother Earth and other creatures. And I've been guided to share that. And on the next page, you write that the Earth is populated with many creatures humans have not yet discovered or whose existence is generally denied. And I'd love to get your reaction on that, on those quotes.
Well, the meeting with Sasquatch was really quite interesting. It was actually happened in your backyard, Ted, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, wonderful.
It was one of my astral trips, and this resulted from a conversation I had with Albert, in which he basically said, you know, Mother Earth has a lot more secrets and mysteries than you can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. And I'll just show you a couple of them. And one of them was a meeting with a Sasquatch. Another one was a meeting with an Irish fairy.
Fascinating.
And so these are fabled creatures that there's been legends around them. You know, a lot of people believe they exist. Most other people say they're just fairy tales. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the meeting with the Sasquatch was quite interesting because she was a lovely creature. She was, you know, like about 9 feet tall with a sort of an ape-like head, body covered in brown hair. And she was a very gentle, wise, empathetic creature. And we had a conversation by telepathy. She basically said, you know, her species lives on every continent of the Earth except Antarctica. Mm-hmm. They've been around for eons. They were created long, long time ago by the insemination of sperm from an alien race with a giant primate that used to live on Earth, which is now extinct. Mm-hmm. And so they're the progeny of that union. Mm-hmm. They're very smart. They have they communicate by telepathy. Mm-hmm. She described that they have something that she called is sort of like a animal sensitive radar, which means that they can detect other animals, including humans, from miles away,
wow.
which is why they're able to sort of avoid contact with humans, because they can basically sense us coming, mm-hmm. Long before we're ever in sight
sure.
of them. So that's how they've been able to avoid us. Mm-hmm. They live underground cities. They come out at night when they can basically avoid detection.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, they've been seen by humans. And occasionally, they get careless and leave the odd footprint here and there. But they're very careful to try to avoid direct contact.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason, as you indicated from that quote, is because they view us to be violent and aggressive.
Right.
And they're very peace-loving. They have no desire whatsoever to get into any conflicts with us. They don't want to fight us. They just want to exist peacefully on Mother Earth. And they'd like to coexist peacefully with mankind, but they're just afraid that if they make open contact, it's going to be just bad news for them. And so mm-hmm. they basically are still in hiding. They hope that one day we will see the light and understand that we should treat all other creatures on our planet, including them, with dignity and respect and love.
Mm-hmm.
And when we ever hit that stage, Ted, mm-hmm. then they'll probably come out and say, "Hi, here we are, and we'd like to be partners with you on this planet Earth."
Well, I think it's coming, and the tide has turned against the war and the hatred. I just had Marilyn Rosner on during my last hour, who talked about in her own experiences in touch with the spirits on the other side, and then she's been told emphatically that there is going to be no Third World War, no Armageddon, that things are changing for the better, and people are finally learning to have far more respect and love and love for each other. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is about I have listeners, of course, in Ireland listening to the program today, and as well as all over the world. But in Ireland, and I wanted to share your story, if you can, with the Irish fairies, if you could.
Right. Well, one of my trips, Albert took me to Ireland, and he said, "I want you to meet another one of Earth's fabled creatures, mythical creatures, fairies." And so we went into this sort of secluded little glen in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Albert sort of goes around behind a bush. Out he comes, holding the hand of this beautiful little lady, about 3 feet tall.
Wow.
Absolutely like a perfect China doll, perfect mm-hmm. tiny China doll, just absolutely beautiful. Her mm-hmm. name was Brina.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wearing an emerald green dress, and she had green eyes, and she just, wow. just sparkled.
Wow.
And so we communicated by telepathy, and she said, "Well, yes, I'm a member of the little people of Ireland, which some people call fairies."
Wow.
And she said that we had lived in Ireland long before humans arrived, and we're very peace-loving, just like the Sasquatch. We like to live in harmony with Mother Nature and with the other creatures. So we had a very nice existence until humans landed on our island.
Oh.
And we thought initially that they were just bigger versions of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
And that we would, fine, we welcomed them with open arms, until we found out that they were violent and aggressive and abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we realized that we had to hide. And so we went underground, basically, still live underground, and we avoid contact with humans, again, because they were afraid that humans would be abusive. And so these little people have been basically living underground. They come out every now and then. They actually have the power to render themselves invisible should they choose to,
mm-hmm.
which is why they're not spotted very often, and occasionally they let themselves be seen, sometimes for a very specific purpose, to help somebody, a human, with their struggles. They sometimes show up and, in person, and here I am, but for the most part, they avoid contact, and they, there's another race of very peace-loving creatures that live on our planet, and has chosen to basically avoid all contact with humans, again, because humans are violent and aggressive. And they say one day it would be really nice if humans could change their ways, and then they could come out from their underground caves and once again dance in the sunlight on the surface of the planet. So that's their hope. And I hope that someday they will be able to do that.
I think they will, and it's going to be within our lifetimes, Albert. Or Albert. I would say Albert's here. Garden. Albert's here, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm having a conversation with him, too. And he said, we are, actually. But I think it will be within our lifetimes. One of the quotes that you have in here is that the Earth is considered one of the toughest schools in the universe. And but the time is for action is upon us, because it's not an easy life here for many people. And I think it's the nature of humanity to be benevolent, to be kind, to be generous, to be loving, and not to engage in war and hate and conflict. I'd love your comments on that, Garnet.
Thank you. Earth certainly is one of the toughest schools. Albert's mentioned this many times. Other psychics and mediums have gotten the same message, I know, that it is a tough school. And Albert has often said that humans should pat themselves on the back for being so courageous to actually come here to this very tough school. So, so we, you know, it is tough. It was intended to be tough. One of the reasons that, or the main reason that it's so tough is because once we're born, we don't remember where we came from or who we really are, Ted. We don't realize that we're really eternal souls, beings of energy. We came from a lovely place called the spirit side before we're born, and that we actually planned the major aspects of our lives in a life plan before we're born. Once we're born, we don't remember any of that. Because we have free will to take actions and make decisions once we're here, we often stray off course. And so it's really a very difficult challenge for humans to figure out where they should be going, what they should be doing with their lives, what is their life purpose. And so that's one of the real big challenges, because we're not allowed to remember what we knew before on the spirit side. We're not allowed to remember all of our previous lives. We can't remember any of that. So we're sort of floundering around here a bit blindly, but that's just one of the major tests. And we knew that would happen before we incarnated, before we chose to come here, Ted. And we chose to come here anyway. So when you get back to the spirit side, Ted, you'll remember why you chose to come here as Ted Marr.
Thank you.
Or maybe you know already, Ted. I don't know.
Well, it's only taken me, I'm 61 now. It only took me about 61 years to realize my sole purpose. But I realize finally what I'm here for, and that's to raise consciousness and try to make this planet a better place.
And you're doing a great job, Ted.
Well, thank you. You are too, my friend. I'm so happy to have you on today. Albert's directed me to pages 68 and 69 in your Dance of Heavenly Bliss book, to marching to a different drummer, and how there are other civilizations that you visited with Albert in the astral plane, which aren't like this planet. And one was called Cronus, C-R-O-N-U-S, a planet many light years from Earth, in which there were two species. There's one, a dominant race created by genetic mutations that resulted from the combination of human and kitty cat DNA, and another one that, in which... men were not another planet called Thraso, T-H-R-A-S-O, in which it's a matriarchal society governed by women. Would you like to say a little bit about those planets, perhaps?
Yeah, Cronus was a bit of a. It started out when I said to Albert at one point, you know, of course humans live on Earth, and I said to him, "Are there other human civilizations on other planets?"
Right.
And he said, "Yes, there are." And he said, "I'll show you a couple examples. You can see that a couple of them are really quite different from what's happening on Earth." So he took me to Cronus, and this was a planet where the dominant race they were basically humanoids, except they had sort of more of a cat-like feline head, because they were a cross of human and kitty cat DNA, as you say. They were the dominant race, and what had happened was the Galactic Council had done an experiment on that planet. There had been no sort of a intelligent life before, and so they planted humans on one continent and this mutant race on another continent, and then they just sort of let things develop to see what happened. Well, it turned out that the mutant felines advanced a bit faster than humans. They eventually sailed over to the continent where the humans were, and they found a mineral there that they needed for their for their industry, and they found out that they could actually easily conquer the humans. So they enslaved the humans, enslaved the humans, so that they would work in this mineral mine, sort of under horrible conditions. And I saw it; it was just like these people were chained up in shackles, and they were carrying buckets of this mineral, the ore, to be refined. And they lived in squalor and sort of compounds. Wow. And it was just awful. And I said to Albert, that's not a great human civilization to be part of, and I'm glad I'm not there. But I said, couldn't somebody do something about this? Because it's just unfortunate that these poor humans were enslaved and lived in such horrible conditions. And he said, generally, once they sort of start an experiment, the Galactic Council, it basically lets it sort of play out, even if it has bad results. But he said that there was a petition before the council to see if they can't do something about these humans and perhaps get them out of slavery and move them to another planet. But anyway, that was sort of like the dark side of a human civilization on another planet, where these people were living in horrible conditions. So then to Thrasso, we went to, which is the matriarchal planet.
Right.
And this was a very modern planet. They had, flying cars and moving sidewalks and very modern technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looked like a very happy place. But the real big difference there was that when we met with the empress there, her name was Marpesia.
Mm-hmm.
She was the leader of the planet, elected sort of every 4 years by popular vote. But she says the men of the planet don't get the vote. They don't get to hold any jobs of responsibility or any mm-hmm. management positions.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, the society is totally ruled by women. They have all the important positions.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, because of that, it's a very peaceful civilization. There's no wars. There's no crime.
Mm-hmm.
They all get along with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the key was that the young boys, when they're born and their children were all sort of artificially incubated and grown up in incubators,
mm-hmm.
Rather than being born in the natural way,
mm-hmm.
she says all the male children were basically chemically sterilized at the age of three.
Wow.
And she says because there's no testosterone level in the men, they're not violent, they're not aggressive, they're docile, mm-hmm. and they're quite content to let the women run the society, and they have no desire to change that.
Huh.
And she said that was quite a change because years ago they had a patriarchal society where men ruled the roost and they were cruel and ambitious and they often subjugated their women and were cruel to them.
Hmm.
And then one day one lady had a vision in a dream, and the person in the vision said to her, there's this plant growing in the forest that's readily available. If you feed that plant to your men, it will drastically reduce their testosterone levels. So she found this plant, started feeding it to her husband, gave it to her secretly to the other ladies, and they gradually started feeding the men this plant. And so over time, the testosterone level of men dropped considerably, and then the women just naturally took over, and the men couldn't have cared less because they're just very docile.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how their society developed from one that was very much patriarchal to a matriarchal society, and that's how they live. And so you can look at that and say, is that the answer to the problems? Don't know. Certainly a different way of living, but all I can say is I'm glad I'm not living on that planet, Ted.
Sure. Well, glad you're not living there.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. Well, I think there's certainly should be a middle ground between that planet and our own, for example. But
I agree.
One thing I have to tell you, I'm being directed by Albert to coming in, and he wants me to mention this. You have a chapter where you've actually talked to Gaia, the Earth, and you have all these messages from the planet itself. And I'll just, Albert wants me to read this first one. Let's see. Quote, this is from Mother Earth. While I understand your narrow definition of life derives from your current sensory limitations, I'm appalled by the abuse humans have inflicted upon me, the Earth, the planet that provides a home for your race. Do you not understand that you must live with the consequences of the damage you have caused to your environment? Continues, I am wounded every day by the toxic chemicals humans spill into my rivers and garbage you dump into my oceans. You slash and burn my magnificent forest to make way for your settlements, and your chemical emissions poison my atmosphere, which is the air you and my other creatures must breathe in order to survive. She continues, your race extracts hydrocarbons from my bowels and then carelessly allows it to spill onto my fields and contaminate my waterways as the result of a ruptured pipeline or a hole in a tanker ship. Your pollution is not only a blight on the pristine beauty of Gaia or planet Earth, it also causes unmitigated harm to other creatures who also share this planet. It wasn't always this way. For millions of years, the human race lived in peaceful coexistence with Mother Earth and all of her creatures. During these golden years, you lived close to nature, understood your home was like a sacred shrine, a place to be worshipped as the womb of all life. In those days, humans shared a sense of oneness with Gaia, a unity that garnered mutual love and respect for all. And then it began to all change. I'll make this quick here. The change was accelerated by the Industrial Revolution. Humans since then have become like an invasive species, like a noxious weed that spreads its tentacles in every direction, smothering all life in its path. Finally, she writes, it's disheartening for me to watch this happen, not only for my sake, but all other creatures who ask for the opportunity, only the opportunity, to have a peaceful existence free from human interference. She writes, you write, Albert writes, it is unconscionable for humans, prodded by their unbridled arrogance, to stomp on all other creatures as though they were insignificant pawns in the conquest of this planet. The solution to this problem requires humans to discard their fear and embrace love for Gaia and all other creatures. Humans must expand their consciousness so they move up the ladder of spiritual enlightenment. Only then will we be able to live together, all together, in peace and harmony.
That was quite a meeting I had. Yes, and thank you for reading that, Ted.
Yeah,
that basically sums it up. I was really quite surprised to learn that Mother Earth actually has a consciousness.
Right,
Gaia has a consciousness an intellect and feelings and emotions, and Gaia is basically responsible for everything. That, you know, she's the sum total of everything on this planet, so she has to look after all the, you know, all the trees and the plants and all of her other creatures, including looking after humans. But she's having a real problem with humans, and it was really quite an interesting conversation. It was like, you know, she's saying, how did you guys go so far off a track? You used to be able to live in harmony with me and with the other creatures on your planet, and now you've gone way off course, and you pollute the atmosphere, dump chemicals in the river, you cause a horrendous pollution, which not only harms me, Gaia, but also my other creatures, because they have to live with your pollution. And she's saying, you know, you really got to stop this, because it's not good. You shouldn't damage the place that you live in, but you are. And she acknowledged that we're getting a little bit better at controlling our pollution, but we still have a long ways to go. And she really wanted me to get the message to everyone else that, look, we really got to get, change our ways, stop our pollution, stop the abuse of the other creatures on our planet, and love and respect everyone. Understand that they all have their own place in the universe, and that the planet Earth wasn't put there just to be used by humans in any way they saw fit. So that was her message. And the other interesting thing, Ted, she said, was that she actually has the power to fight back. She can actually manipulate things on her surface, in her mantle. She can actually cause more earthquakes and volcanoes and tornadoes and hurricanes if she wants to. And she has been doing a bit of that, sort of as a shot across our bow, to sort of give us a warning that we can't carry on the way we are without suffering some consequences. And so she doesn't really want to harm us. She just wants us to wake up and pay attention to what's going on.
Well, that's the most profound thing I've ever heard of my show, actually. And I want to read this, too. It says this right here. It says, you've written, or she's written, I beseech you to change your ways so that you can enjoy life in harmony with a new Earth that will be free from violence and abuse. She writes, and this is very profound, she says, modify your behavior, humans, or suffer the consequences. The choice is yours. My goodness.
Yeah, it was a warning for sure. But she's really a kind-hearted consciousness. She doesn't want to do away with humans. She doesn't want to harm us, but she does want us to wake up and pay attention and to change our ways. And so that's, as she put it, it's a warning shot across our bow, and we should pay attention to that. But anyway, it was an amazing conversation I had with her. I actually went back after that, had another conversation, which is described in my fourth book, which I don't want to get into right now, but it was an amazing experience. And a lot of people over the ages have speculated that Gaia, Mother Earth, is something more than just rocks and rivers and trees, that there's something more there.
Right.
I found out that there is in fact something much more there.
That is just fascinating. But I know that here in the Seattle area, the 3.1 million Seattle Puget Sound area, certainly up in Canada, across the United States, and in more than 70 countries around the world where my show is currently being heard today, the majority of people listening to this show would safe to assume that they would choose certainly a harmonious planet. They don't want to destroy the Earth, that they want a better planet and a harmonious planet, because that's the purpose of this show, is to increase consciousness and make us a far better, better planet and a better Earth. But I just thank you so much for sharing that. I've read lots of books. I've read lots of psychic books. But I've never met anyone like yourself, Garnet, who's actually talked to Mother Earth and channeled messages from her. And it was very, very, very profound.
Well, I'm very excited to think that she or Albert, or I'm not sure who arranged it, picked me to have the conversation. Very happy for that. Mm-hmm. And I wholeheartedly agreed with Gaia that I would put her message into my book so that other people could understand her concerns and hear what she had to say. So I was delighted to be that messenger.
Right, exactly. There's something else, too, and this is very interesting. Chapter 13, Strange Bedfellows. You wrote about You wrote here that you met both Jesus Christ and Adolf Hitler on the other side. Could you tell me a little bit about that meeting?
Yeah, it was very. I almost dropped down in surprise because we were walking along this this path, and all of a sudden, on the spirit side, Albert's leading me. All of a sudden, we come up to these two individuals sitting on a bench having a very amicable conversation. And as I got closer, it was sort of like my jaw dropped open. It was like there was Jesus Christ and Adolf Hitler, and I thought, what are these two guys, these polar opposites, the paragon of virtue right. and the evil monster of historical Earth, sitting there and chatting, smiling, and having a very friendly conversation? I thought, what on earth is going on? Well, Albert brought these two together very much for the purpose of basically shocking me a bit, I guess, making me realize about how the cycle of reincarnation works. And so I had a conversation, first of all, with the soul whose last life was as Adolf Hitler, of course, the evil monster that we all know about. And he was a very, very kind and wise soul. And as soon as we started the conversation, he morphed out of his military uniform that made him look like Hitler. And he said he did that just so I would recognize him. And he morphed into his natural form, which is a young, very handsome young man named Matthew. So I had a very nice conversation with him. He said, you know, I was a horrible monster back on Earth when I was Adolf Hitler, and I really regret all the harm that I caused. And you know, when I look back on it, I hadn't planned any of that harm in my life plan. Before I was born, I had planned to be born where I was born and to be in a situation where I could pursue a political career. Mm-hmm. But he said I didn't know that it would turn out that badly. I'd hoped that I would have I'd be a good politician as opposed to a horrible monster. Mm-hmm. And he said what happened was that his human emotions just got out of control, his negative emotions, and he ended up just spinning totally off track and doing the horrible things that he did. And he said he's very sorry for that, and he regrets it. Mm-hmm. But he did say that he has met with many of the souls of his death camp victims back on the spirit side, and there's been total reconciliation because on the spirit side, there's only unconditional love from one soul to another. Wow. No matter what happened in a previous life on Earth, there's no carryover of hatred or need for revenge or any of that stuff. So he says, total reconciliation with these souls. They understand the role we all play as we come to Earth. And so he says, now I've learned a lot of lessons from that, and I'm really eager to plan another life where I can go back to Earth and this time do something really good. So that was his story.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then I talked to Jesus. And he said, you know, he and Matthew, who was previously Hitler, got together quite often to discuss their lives. And Jesus said that, he was recruited by the Council of Wise Ones to incarnate on Earth, 2,000 years ago, to help humanity sort of take the next step up the spiritual ladder. Mm-hmm. They felt that humans needed a kick in the pants, basically, to get moving. So he was sent down there specifically to do that job. And he was a master, still is a master. Wow. So he's a very wise and advanced soul. Wow. And because he was a master, when he was on Earth, he had learned how to focus his thoughts into powerful beams of energy. And that's how he created his miracles. Wow. And so he was able to walk on water and turn water into wine and raise people from the dead because he was able to tap into the energy of the universe. And so that was why he came there. He said that I asked him, if you could perform miracles, why did you let yourself be crucified and have a horrible death? He said, I could have stopped that had I chosen to, but I wanted to make a very dramatic statement for my followers, one that would sort of heighten my place in history and help them sort of start a new religion. And he thought that dying on the cross was a good way of setting that sort of example, dying on the cross and then rising again up from the dead. And so he allowed that to happen. He could see it was coming, and he didn't stop it. And so I said, well, what do you think of the Christian Church? In the years following your time on Earth, he said, well, he expected that they would form a religion, but he didn't know quite how it would go. And he said, he sort of shook his head and said, they still do preach my teachings, but in a lot of cases they've sort of gone off course, and my teachings have been hijacked by the religious leaders that have led the church since my time, and they've now got all kinds of different beliefs and rules and so on that have nothing to do with my teachings. So that's a bit unfortunate, but he said, that's what happens on Earth. You never know where humans are going to go, and he said, You know, so that's how the Christian church developed. But he was, he's very, obviously, very wise, kind, compassionate spirit. And he spends a lot of time on the spirit side, helping souls plan their next lives and also helping newly arrived souls who've had a hard time on earth sort of get back into transition mode on the spirit side. So he's very active. I said to him, would you come back again to earth, you know, for the second coming? He said, that's up to the Council of Wise Ones. If they ask me, I'll go, but I have no plans at this time.
Fascinating.
So very, very interesting contrast between, you know, as I say, the epitome of evil and the epitome of virtue.
Wow.
Sitting there on the spirit side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that really caught my eye. The whole book caught my eye. It's a fascinating book. In chapter 16, A Life Cut Short, page 122, you write that our souls have the right to determine when our physical bodies die, and no one determines that by accident. And and Albert told you, quote, a soul always has the right to pick the date its physical body dies, even when suicide is the cause of death. Sometimes suicide is an exit point planned well in advance by the soul. And I was wondering if you could comment a little bit about that. It's fascinating. Read what you wrote here.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's sort of a startling revelation he made to me during my first conversation was that all souls, no one dies by accident. Souls choose when to leave their incarnation. So that, for example, if 300 people die in a plane crash, that was no accident. Each one of those souls on board that plane chose that time and place to exit their incarnation. And so that was sort of an amazing sort of revelation for me anyway. And I asked him at one point about suicide, you know, well, when people commit suicide, is that something, are they doing that against the wishes of their soul?
Right.
And he said, basically, no. He said, some cases a suicide is it actually a planned exit point before you're born, wow. And in other cases, it's because your soul doesn't want to leave the incarnation, but the human mind is so twisted and distorted in its grief and despair that it just refuses to carry on and to live the life that it was intended to live, and basically throws in the towel. And so at that stage, the soul just says, well, okay, I'm not going to fight this anymore. The human body I'm journeying in, it's just basically a lost cause and there's no point in carrying on. So, okay, I'll let you terminate your life by suicide. And so that's what happens in most cases of suicide. And so it's just a matter of the soul saying, okay, I guess I need a new vehicle here. Let this one die. I'll go back to the spirit side and come back again in another one so I can continue my journey on earth. So that's often what happens with a suicide.
Fascinating, fascinating. I've got a whole bunch of more questions, but I'll get to the most important ones. I'm going to have you back again, Garnet, because you're so interesting.
Happy to come back, Ted.
Wonderful, wonderful. One of the things you wrote about was attending a musical concert given by Mozart and the Beatles on the other side.
Yes.
Could you explain a little bit about that?
That was amazing. The very first concert I went to was we were just walking down the main boulevard of the white city that he always took me to on the spirit side called Aglaia.
Uh-huh.
And we were just, I can't remember where we were heading, and all of a sudden I heard a bunch of cheering and clapping, whatever, off to one side. So I said to Albert, can I go see what's going on? He said, sure. So we walked down a side street, came to the top of a very large open-air amphitheater. We were at the top level when rows and rows of seats went down towards the bottom where there was a stage. And so we just sat down there, and the place was full of souls, full of people. And all of a sudden, a couple guys come out on stage. Mm-hmm. They were backed by the souls that were formerly members of the London Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
And as I got a closer look, it was the soul of John Lennon and George Harrison.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
And so these two then put on a concert, basically the two of them, which was absolutely amazing. Like all the Beatles songs, all the great Beatles songs, and the music and the sound was just, out of this world, basically. It was an amazing sort of concert. And it was one of the most enjoyable things that I've had on the spirit side was listening to this concert, because I've really enjoyed the Beatles and so many of their songs. And so Albert said that these kinds of concerts go on all the time for souls to enjoy. The next concert I saw was one where Mozart was putting on one of his performances, and he went through all of his amazing classical masterpieces again in the same amphitheater. So he was just trying to demonstrate to me that on the spirit side, There's a lot of really neat things you can do, a lot of recreational activities, a lot of concerts you can go to, and it's just a lovely place. And he said that quite often souls who have performed in a musical fashion or as actors on Earth will wow the crowds on the spirit side, because they really enjoy performing, and performing on the spirit side is just one of the things that they like to do. So it was an amazing Beatles concert, although we only had two of the Beatles because the other two are still living on Earth.
Sure.
But the other two will join eventually, I'm sure.
Wow, that is just so amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. Toward the end of your book, on page 179, you met a lady named Athena, who's one of the, quote, one of our wise old souls, a master who has roamed the earth for eons, spreading love and sharing her wisdom. She was worshipped in ancient Greece as the goddess of wisdom, courage, and inspiration, and her reputation on earth, as you write, is richly deserved. And she writes, you quoted her here, as a master, you wrote, I no longer need to reincarnate on the denser planes, but I do appear on earth from time to time to assist other souls who need extra help during troubled times. And then she wrote, you are frustrated because you don't know for sure where you're going, and you're fearful about taking a wrong turn and making a mistake. And she writes, think of your life as a vast labyrinth of paths with numerous twists and turns, except there's no dead ends, and you will always be able to find your way out of the maze. You will enjoy valuable life experiences no matter which path you choose, even when you stray off the path you'd planned to take before you were born. So you need to relax and enjoy the life wherever it may take you. And the other thing is that she writes is that brick walls are life's way of telling you that you need to change direction. And the real challenge is learning to tell one from the other. My advice to you is to listen to your feelings and follow your heart. Your intuition is never wrong, but your mind often is. When facing obstacles, you must strive to rein in the thoughts that you charge around your mind like a wild horse is on the loose, and focus your attention on the whispers from your guides. Your guides are always there for you, and they will never let you down. She finally writes, you don't forget that you're never alone in your current journey, even though it may seem like that sometimes. I'd love your reaction to that. It was beautiful what you wrote.
She was an amazing soul. Mm-hmm. Incredibly beautiful, stunningly beautiful, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Very regal. Mm-hmm. And I met her in her large house on this island not far from Aglaia. And she said that, as you mentioned from the quote, that she has incarnated on Earth many times. She's a master.
Yeah.
She, in one life in ancient Greece, she was there to help other people with their journeys. And because of her powers as a master, focusing her thoughts, she was able to perform things that they thought were, magic or miraculous. And that's why they deemed her to be a goddess
mm-hmm.
Athena.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of title is still sort of stuck. And she said, well, I'm not a goddess. I'm just a wise soul master, but that's what they like to call me, so I'll go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So she had some very sage advice, as you quoted there, about how to find your life purpose.
Right.
And essentially, the main trick is to listen to what our guides are telling us, because our guides are always there.
Right.
They're always sending us messages, whispers in our minds, intuitive flashes, gut feelings, feelings in your heart, and they're trying to steer you in the right direction, the right direction being the one that you had planned for yourself before you were born.
Right.
And so they're always trying to guide you. Most of the time, though, our minds are so cluttered with so many other thoughts that we have
about
what went on last week and what's going to happen next month, that we don't always hear it. And so we really have to sort of quiet ourselves, sit quietly in meditation, and eventually we'll heal more and more of our messages, which will then make our lives more fulfilled, and we'll feel happier because we will feel like we're on the right path.
And I couldn't agree with her more, and you more, and Albert more, and they're all saying, for me to reiterate this on the air, that you have to trust your heart. You have to trust your heart when making major decisions about anything, and not your mind, because your mind is logical. It sticks to the third dimension, but a lot of things which aren't logical are better for you, but you only know that through your heart, through love, which is the most powerful force in the universe.
Well said, Ted. That's exactly the message that Athena was giving to me, and
mm-hmm.
it's a good message for all of your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Follow your heart. Your heart is really speaking from your soul, from your guides, and your mind often has its own agenda, which is, as you say, it's wired into this the dense plane, the third dimension, and so you're in this constant battle between what your heart wants and what your mind wants, and you should always strive to let your heart win the day, and then you'll be on the right path, and you'll feel more fulfilled.
And one thing that you asked Albert during one of your trips was that, quote, will my race, humans here on this planet, be able to stop their violent and abusive behavior before it's too late? And you quoted Albert that human civilization has unfortunately strayed off course by allowing fear to rule their actions. And the only way, he says, to conquer fear is through love. If you can fully embrace love for all humans and for Mother Earth and all of her creatures, fear and all of its spin-off emotions like anger, hate, and greed will melt away like a snowbank in the spring. Isn't that beautiful? And then he says, then you wrote, you have witnessed the unconditional love we enjoy in the spirit side and the peace and happiness that abounds on this side of the veil. This is a goal that all humans should strive to achieve, but it will require a concerted effort by everyone on your planet. When you get back home, this is Albert talking to you, when you get back home, remember what you've learned on your astral adventures and spread my message to all who will listen. The first day of your life begins tomorrow, so use your time wisely. I will be back before too long to continue our discourse, but now the ball is in your court. Go forth and tell your story to the world. So,
yeah, that was a very, very poignant message that he gave me. And I certainly am happy to spread his message by writing my books. But, you know, the message he was giving us is that, look, at if you fully embrace love, there's no room for fear, anger, hate, or greed. Mm-hmm. If love occupies everything in your life, then there's no room for the negative emotions, and that's really where we need to go. And it's not easy because we have these negative emotions that always flare up all the time. That's part of being human, and you know, we can't ever get rid of them totally, but we can always restrain them and curtail them. And so if you feel some anger welling up inside of you as you're sort of going about your day-to-day activities, the best thing you could do is just try to smother it with love and understand that whatever's causing your anger, that chances are that's a person who's having a journey on this planet like you are. They're a soul. They're part of the source, connected to you. And if you understand that, then instead of being angry at the person who has offended you, you should just shower them with love and forgiveness, and then you're going to be in a better place. And the other person may well, you know, by receiving your love, change their attitude as well. And that's really something we all have to strive to do to make this world a better place to live.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the things that I want to share with you now is from Professor Albert Einstein, who I've been in contact with for the past 2 years. He had written a letter to his daughter. He wrote 1,400 letters to his daughter until he passed away in the mid-50s. And he asked his daughter to not to publish their contents until 2 days after his death. So in the late 80s, his daughter, Lisserel is her name, I think. It's L-I-E-S-E-R-L, published his letters. And one of them was about love. And I'd like to read part of his letter quickly now. This is being directed to by Albert. He writes, Albert Einstein, Professor Einstein writes, when he proposed the theory of relativity, very few understood me. And I will reveal now to you what I think was even more important than my physics work. This is an extremely powerful force that so far science has not found a formal explanation to. It's a force that includes and governs all others, and it is even behind any phenomenon operating in the universe that has not yet been identified by us. And that universal force is love. And that's in capitals in his letters. When scientists looked for a unified theory of the universe, they forgot the most important unseen force. Love is light that enlightens those who give and receive it. Love is gravity because it makes some people feel attracted to others. Love is power because it multiplies the best we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. Love unfolds and reveals. For love, we live and die. Love is God and God is love. This force explains everything and gives meaning to life. This is the variable that we have ignored for far too long, maybe because we are afraid of love, because it's only energy in the universe that man has not learned to drive at will. To give visibility to love, I made a simple substitution in my most famous equation, and he writes, instead of E equals MC squared, he says that we should use that instead. We accept that energy to heal the world can be obtained through love multiplied by the speed of light squared. We arrive at the conclusion that love is the most powerful force because there is no limits in its ability. And I thought that was just such a beautiful saying. And I want to credit Michiko Hayashi, the Emoto Peace Project, for sending me this quote some months ago. I had no idea that Professor Einstein I know that that he greatly regretted his involvement with the atomic bomb after it was used in World War II. But if he had to do it over again, he tells me he would create a bomb of love, which would shower humanity with love and gratitude around the planet and create a very, very peaceful planet based on love and harmony.
That was an amazing quote, Ted. I'm glad you read it. I think it's just beautiful. And it's really, that's not well known. Like people usually, when they quote Albert Einstein, it's usually something about, science and physics and so on. But that sort of quote should get around. I think it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm in the process now of writing a book with messages from him and some other great spirits as well, including Michel de Nostradamus. It's going to take me some time to write it, but my friends on the other side say it's already written. I just have to sit down and start writing it. So
well, good for you, Ted. I really encourage you to do that because I think it would be a wonderful book.
Well, thank you. Well, I need to take some time to do it. I've got it all in my head. I just have to sit down and start writing, and it will happen by June. That's my target, hopefully for the conference. Oh, I wanted to tell you, I know we haven't discussed these details yet, Garnet, but I'd like for you to be the keynote speaker at my conference this June. We start on Friday, June 10, but we'll work out the details later. But you have a lot of wonderful things.
Delighted to do that, Ted. Thank you for inviting me, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, me too. We have about 4 minutes left, and are there any comments, certainly, that you'd like to say from your work? I know that Albert probably can give you lots of ideas, but I'd love to hear, give you the floor to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Well, one of the messages that Albert gave me, which I thought was very sort of showed that he was such a very wise and sage soul, was that he said to me, there's lots of stuff going on your planet. Journey on Earth doesn't seem to be like a lot of times it's very difficult, not much fun. He said to me, but what you really need to do, and everyone should adhere to this, is that he said you need to lighten up and not take everything so seriously. He says you're on an interesting adventure. You're having a human journey on Earth. You're here to learn and experience things. You chose this life, and you did it for a purpose. And you should realize that no matter what you do, no matter how many wrong turns you make, how many mistakes you make, you're always going to end up back in the spirit side. And so, don't be dismayed by your mistakes. Don't be dismayed if you think you've gone off course, because in the end result, it doesn't really matter, because when you die, you don't take any of the baggage from Earth with you, other than your memories and your experiences, and you go back to the spirit side. And so he said, laugh lots, smile at everyone you meet, and enjoy your journey. And so I'd like to leave that with that message with your listeners, Ted.
What a beautiful, beautiful saying. I just want to make this quick announcement that 1 week from today, I'll be at a UFO conference at a resort in Ocean Shores. And if you are in the area, it's about the distance from Olympia is about an hour and a half, 2.5 hours from Seattle. But if you are interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or call me at 509-750-9793. I will be giving a presentation out there on ET Life, as well as a brief presentation on the Modal Peace Project. And also we'll be doing psychic readings when I'm out there as well. So if you are in the area, please come out. I'd love to see you all. And I think the most important message of your entire book, I think, is love, basically, because that is the most important, the most profound and most important force, powerful force in the universe, Garnet. And I think if we recognize that, then the destructive behavior that many people still engage in on this planet will fall by the wayside. But I know things are changing, and I can feel it. It's in the air. It's like spring in the air. The planet's changing. People don't want conflict. People don't want to go to war. I know 3 years ago here in the United States, there was a movement to go to war with Syria, and everyone stood up against it. So our government didn't do it, thank goodness. But I think the overwhelming message of your book and your work is that there are brighter times ahead of us, and you've done a great service to humanity by writing all this wonderful messages from the other side. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for saying that, Ted. I really appreciate your comments.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Your book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, it's available at Amazon now. Is that right? You can get it now?
You can get the ebook right now. You can pre-order the paperback, which will be available at the end of the 20th of March. Okay. So you can put in your pre-order right now or download the ebook right now. Okay. Or if you really want the paperback right now, you can order it from my publisher directly. And there's a link on my website to Ozark okay. Mountain where okay. that you can buy it right now.
Okay, wonderful. All this information is on my website, and I hope everyone has a wonderful and happy weekend. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Above us, only sky.